fans, we're putting some things up. You'll see these little tented signs. We're going to ask you all to sit by regions, if you would, so that you're sitting with people who might be living a little bit closer to you.
Hi, we're asking everyone to please sit at a table where you are living. We're trying to organize ourselves according to geographic area. So please look for the construction paper tent table card in the middle of the table and make sure you're sitting with people who are from your same region. And if you're from the Pacific area, we guess that there probably be so many of you, we have that organized according to districts.
six people at a table. Some of you are so fabulous and you're gathering with lots and lots of people, but we're looking for six people at a table. So if there's more than six, could you find your district or region at another table spread out a little more? Thank you.
And if people are finding it difficult to find a table with just six people, because that's the plan for this workshop, because we need another sign for a district or region, let me know. But some of you have tables with more than six, and it's going to be difficult to do the exercise. So it would be good if you could keep the tables to six.
Katie, you're cool with the end?
Yeah, I just learned about it, and I'm good. I'm going to ask people to commit to each other.
So here's kind of the talking points.
Can I clear with you that someone has asked if we can say something about the climate change, AIW?
Sure. So anyways, just add that to the wrap-up.
So I'm just going to, yeah, it's off the program. I'm going to add that to the wrap-up.
We're scrapping this. We just don't have the bandwidth.
Okay. And then we'll have a commitment buddy, and I'm going to ask people to turn to each other and make commitments and exchange information so they can be in touch with each other.
Oh, of course, they are too.
Yep. And then I'm going to do a blessing.
Yeah.
I don't have recorded music or anything. I'm just going to.
That's okay.
So I don't think I need this.
Okay. Anyways, if you two want and. Yeah, and just to let you know, because this is so far away from where our next workshop is, I'm going to have to do.
Yeah, me too. I think mine is more too. I think it's on the web. We should get started. There are a lot of people here.
Yeah.
Susan, are you going to be responsible for the lights?
Yeah.
when you move... I know that our plan here is that we're going to turn off the lights and he's going to start speaking, but if people aren't talking, I might ask people to be quiet.
So you guys have decided to stake out this table, so here's the sign up.
Hi, if you're just joining us, we're sitting at tables according to where we live in terms of regions and districts. So as you're coming in, please note the table tents on the middle of the table, and please join others who are already seated in the same geographic region as where you live. And we're ready to roll in about a minute. And if you need another sign, please raise your hand, and Susan Leslie will help with that.
Well, this is Pacific Central, but why don't we just write Pacific Northwest? So we'd just like to make sure that everyone's seated so we can begin.
It's really important for you not to be at a table by yourself. So if you find yourself alone, please join another table, because believe it or not, we're going to try the miraculous to have a very highly interactive workshop, and it's only going to work if you have a chance to talk to people. So if you could please join another table if you're alone, that would be really helpful. And we're having some technical difficulties, so resilience is a really important part of climate justice work, and we're going to model that at the moment. And if you could please take your seats, because we're going to turn the lights down for the beginning. Susan, if you could please.
Race, class, gender, animals, and climate, the dominant class is so violent. According to them, we're supposed to be divided, inhale dirty air, while animals remain commodity and obviously silent. Those capitalists are tyrants, keeping us focused on the illusion of race. While the carbon in the climate per parts per million increases at an unhealthy pace, oil in lakes, oceans, and rivers, just so that black gold is internationally delivered, these corporations are so cold that it makes me shake and shiver. Homes are surrounded by incredible amounts of pollution. We're looking to our national, international political leaders for better laws and solutions. But they have lost the common connection. They're either bought or are seeking money for the coffers or for re-election. We're living in a nation that believes in mass incarceration, impoverished cities and communities where exists mass occupation. Occupation. The streets are hot not only because of global warming, but because of the way Officer Friendly is performing his duties. How come we're still not alarmed at factory farms? The way animals are treated is doing us all harm, especially if they're still a meat, you're still a meat eater. The same damaged emotions like the animals receive from shock is what you'll digest. You better believe. Race, class, climate, animal mistreatment, and destruction, it's all a travesty, a cycle of division and mass production happening in the 21st century. In United States penitentiaries, men and women are treated like cattle. Money is being made off of them, too, by the privatized prison industry. It's all financial and mathematical. Mathematical, practical for the prison owner, amassing labor at no or low cost, add it all up in a society who is lost. The people are suffering globally, not in just communities, locally. Hopefully we'll focus on the climate changing and not leave the people across the globe hanging. They are the ones who should be learning from, we should be learning from. They are closest to the earth. They'll be remaining. And how about local energy supplies? Investing in those makes us aware and wise. The size of the problem is far beyond you and I, you and I, you and I. Think about the farmer in Africa whose crops die because the climates rise. The size of his family, he keeps it on his mind. We cannot let go of the unmoved. We cannot let go or be unmoved or blind. They grow products that benefit even us, even though we're miles away. Climate change is right here, right now, today. It's a global reality. We need global solutions. While the politicians in Washington still consider it an illusion. Women are subsistence farmers in more numbers than men. To the land and to the families, they have to tend. Gender discrimination has to end. Women must be educated and elevated for us all to win. How can we live anywhere when there's massive deforestation and melting polar caps? We'll all be affected no matter where we're at. We'll all be affected no matter where we're at.
Welcome. I'm Reverend Peggy Clark. You have now met the wonderful and fabulous spoken word artist, Christopher Sims. We also have with us Susan Leslie and Pam Spar, and we are thrilled that you're all here today. This is going to be a highly interactive workshop. We are hoping that when you leave here, you are committed and you have committed to each other, and you're going to be walking out of here with at least one phone number and an email address in your pocket. Someone with whom you will continue to commit, continue to work. This is not one of those workshops that ends after an hour. This is one of those workshops that changes your life and changes our culture. she says. I'm in. So I was talking to a friend recently. She works at Barnes & Noble. She makes a little more than minimum wage. And she said to me, "Peggy, I think it's very cool that you're into climate justice, and I wish I had the time for that, but I have two children to feed. There isn't really much more I can do. So thank you for your work. I will continue to live my life as needed." I was listening. I was sitting in a group of ministers. There were about 50 ministers there, and we were talking about the ecological crisis, and one of them raised his hand and said, "I get it. I'm with you. But what happens to Black Lives Matter? What happens when women and men, when children are being shot in the streets and mass incarcerated? Then what do we do? I don't have the time to participate in all of these things. I can't fix everything." I was organizing the People's Climate March, and I wanted Reverend Peter Morales to join us, and I was told he's not going to come because his issue is immigration. He's not interested in this. Now, so that you know, he was there. I didn't believe the lie. But the idea that he's interested in one thing, the idea that we can only take on one thing, the idea that we have one story that we can tell and we can't tell other stories is part of what's going on. Does it sound familiar? Are any of you feeling that way? This is what happens. There's this sense of, I can't deal with what's over there because I've got to deal with what's over here. And what I'd like to suggest here today is that what's over there is the same thing as what's over here. That we are talking about a single paradigm. We're talking about one way of living. We're talking about a throwaway culture. A culture that says that there's a dominant class and that everything and everyone else is in service to it. That there is a way in which we support one group and everyone else is expendable. People of color can be shot in the streets. They can be put in jail as long as they're out of the way. Animals, a story we don't want to tell, we certainly don't want to hear. There are so many ways in which we have allowed the silo to happen. We continue to live in a paradigm that tells us that Earth is supply source and sewer. That it is here entirely to serve the dominant class. Am I right? Sounds like something we've all been living. And as long as we divide and say, I can't do this because I'm doing that, we aren't looking at the big problem. We're not looking at the intersections. We're not looking at the paradigm that keeps us all held in a model that continues to break. So it's a really good thing that we're Unitarian Universalists, because our faith has provided a solution for us. Our faith tells us that we are interdependent. Our faith tells us that every person, I'd want to stretch this to every being, has worth and dignity. That we are all valued and valuable, and we are all dependent on each other, and that no particular group is more important than any other. We have a faith that tells us that we can be profoundly connected rather than broken. That we can live into a promise of wholeness, that at the core of who we are is our salvation. So that in this room we have promise. We have the promise of what can be if we are willing to move deeply into who we are, to move deeply into our shared story, and have the courage to come out connected, wildly, radically, passionately connected to each other and the ground on which we stand. And that's where we're going today. We are going to move deeply and move out with each other. And so I'm going to give you Susan Leslie, who's going to move us. I'm going to give you Pam Sparr, who's going to move us through that process.
I don't know if we can, we probably could be fairly interchangeable. I think most people may think so. I just need to ask, are we going to have the PowerPoint? Otherwise, I'm going to take my laptop so I can have my notes from it. Okay, we're just going to go without my notes. How many, pardon me?
I just want to introduce Pam Sparr, because she is now the, she has a new title at the UUSC. She's the Director of Justice Builders. It's a new program that they're rolling out because they get how urgent the time is. And Pam is so steeped in environmental justice, she really does not need her notes. But I know how that is, so I'm going to give her a minute to find her notes. But Pam has, you know, decades of experience in the environmental justice movement and is one of the people who came up with the idea to have a Commit to Respond initiative for Unitarian Universalism.
Now the question is, can everybody see this image clearly?
No.
Great, we want to thank for this wonderful collaboration to help us deal with the technical issues. I just want to quickly recap what some of our goals are for the workshop and then move smartly into my section. We are now in the second point, which is a brief overview of Commit to Respond, and then we're going to talk about how we can go for maximum impact in the way that Peggy was speaking in terms of looking at the intersection of various forms of oppression and being really smart about how we can find partners and projects that allow us to move forward on several fronts at once. We're giving you some congregational case studies to work on, and hopefully that will get your juices going in terms of doing some strategizing together. We're going to then debrief them and talk about how we identify partners when we go back home. And as Peggy mentioned, we're going to close with a kind of a commitment ceremony. Commit to Respond is an amazing, amazing watershed moment in the life of our denomination. And, you know, often different I've worked on the outside, now I'm working on the inside, and that may be true for many of you in terms of, I know that there's a lot of passion on at the grassroots level in our denomination about working on climate justice. And as far as I understand, this is the first time in, we'll say living history, we won't say before that, that so many UU organizations have said this is of such great moral significance that we're all going to row in the same boat and we're going to row in the same direction, which I think we should give applause because that is really amazing. Sometimes the biggest change has to come right in our own shop first, right, in terms of having, we won't list, but we're now up to 9 sponsoring partners, which is really, really great. So how many have looked actually at the Commit to Respond website? A good number, great. So I'm gonna just go through this next section really fast so we can get to the kind of fun, and I'm a vegetarian, but I haven't found a good word to substitute for meaty. You know, tofu-y just doesn't do it, so. But to the meaty part of our conversation. So one of the really big pieces that we feel we all need to wrestle with is that a lot of the dominant discussion in the media and in the political realm uses the term environmentalism, or think that this is particularly an environmental problem. And what we're trying to do is to shift the nation's, doing our part to shift the nation's conversation to actually, this is about justice, this is about a profound moral obligation that we have to each other, to the future, to all beings on this planet. And until we shift the tone and the tenor of the conversation, I mean, I think a lot of us were probably really thrilled about the Pope's encyclical recently, because that was his gift to try and shift the conversation. And let's hear it for Pope Francis. And hopefully Peggy won't mind. Is it okay if I mention you? Okay. So I'm going to out Peggy just a little bit. Peggy has a background in Catholic theology and actually taught it at, excuse me, the level of a university. And so she's been helping us appreciate the encyclical in light of UU theology. So if you have some particular questions after the workshop or want to pick Peggy's brain about UU theology and Pope Francis's theology, she's the person to hit up. And hopefully she won't get too many emails, or but anyway, she's really great. The other piece about climate justice that Commit to Respond is attempting to help us all focus on is that people's needs need to be at the center of our response. And we'll talk a little bit about how to understand that in terms of all beings, not being totally human-centric, and particularly those who are most affected, both in terms of frontline communities dealing with the impact of climate change, but also the communities that are the upstream communities that are dealing with the extraction industries like coal mining and natural gas and oil that also have tremendous economic and cultural and social effects on those communities. So we need to look at both upstream and downstream. And I'm going to put a little plug. Camila, Jacob, and I are doing a workshop on Saturday, which we're going to do a very fun mural drawing process that we're looking at how to look upstream and downstream. So think about adding that to your packed agenda. So the Commit to Respond initiative has three kind of sections. One is called SHIFT for short, and that is calling us all to look at our carbon footprint, but not just ourselves personally, but our community and the institutions that we're a part of, because the scope of the change that is needed has to be far, far greater and more structural in nature than simply changing our light bulbs. So there are a lot of suggestions on the web about how to do that. We're going to give a couple of suggestions in just a second. Advance refers to advancing the rights of affected communities. We'll talk a little bit more about what that means. And grow talks about growing the climate movement. If we're going to have the kind of big picture structural impact that we want, we have to be part of a much larger dynamic group. We're only roughly 100,000 people, and Margaret Mead notwithstanding, it's going to take all of us. So I'm going to skip these in the interest of time, because we have started late. But what I'd like to do, could we have the lights up, please, Melissa? Thank you so much. So what I want to do is, just before we get to the case studies, is talk about how we find this sweet spot. if we're really serious about making the kind of institutional and structural change that is required, what we're looking at is how are we changing our... Oh, thank you. And I know this is really small. I'm sorry. Economic system, how are we changing social relations in terms of issues around discrimination and oppressions, and how are we addressing the environment in terms of the destruction and pollution? And what we're suggesting is there are some really great examples that I'll quickly just relate to that find that nice sweet spot that will address economic inequalities, that will address social inequalities, and that will address climate change. And so finding those projects or activities can actually benefit work in all three areas. Because I don't know about you, but I come from a congregation that will not be named. But often, you know, the folks interested in racial justice were saying, why are you really so focused on weatherizing, you know, the church? That's really taking us away from racial justice. And I'll explain just a little bit how we developed a project that drove home the point that actually weatherizing the church was one of the most radical things we could do in our immediate community to bring about both racial justice and economic justice. But that's a little teaser. Okay. So a couple of examples from SHIFT. And these categories aren't cleanly demarcated. Often a lot of the projects, Susan and I were working on identifying which projects to lift up just to kind of get the conversation going, and we realized that a lot of them could be in SHIFT in advance or GROW in advance. So let's not get hung up in that. Just a couple to kind of whet your appetite. There's a Green Sanctuary congregation that has decided a few things. One is, there are many congregations that people commute a fair distance in order to come to church. And in some locations, automobile exhaust, like I was in Washington, D.C., is a major part of air pollution and is a big issue. One congregation said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to buy a bus, and we're going to pick up a whole bunch of people who want to go to church. But they don't have to be UUs. We'll take them to whatever church they want to go to. And my goodness, this means that while they're on the bus, they start talking to each other. And my goodness, you know, we drop them off at the Baptist church. You know, we drop them off at Presbyterian church. Maybe this is a great way that we can begin to build bridges across racial ethnic identity, across class lines, and builds a loving, supportive community, both for elders, people with disabilities, and lowers our carbon footprint. So that's kind of one example about how to collectively start shrinking the carbon footprint that moves us on economic and social justice as well. Especially works well in areas where there's not much public transportation. Another SHIFT example is there's a great UU church in North Carolina that decided that it would partner with a Baptist church and Habitat for Humanity to start to weatherize and build green low-income housing, and then to set up a demonstration home about how you could lower water usage and energy usage that anyone could come in and learn about doing that. So again, it was a great way to link building affordable housing in the community, which was both for them an economic and racial justice issue, and again, hits that sweet spot of climate. So let's just do a quick examples from Advance. Has anyone heard of the Democracy Collaborative? No. Oh, great. Are you from Ohio? Hi. Oh, I know Dorothy. Hello. Okay. So the Democracy Collaborative, I'm not being too biased, which is based in Tacoma Park, Maryland, which is where I'm from, is this really awesome, awesome nonprofit. And I think they're awesome because they said, our sole reason for existing is going to be building wealth in low-income communities of color. And I'm from Ohio. And when I heard they went to Huff, is anyone here from Ohio and know about the history of Huff? Huff is a neighborhood of Cleveland that used to be affluent and primarily white, and then by the 50s and 60s totally flip-flopped in terms of demographics and became pretty working class and low income, and then when the civil rights era came, was destroyed by a lot of fires and burning and never recovered. So when I heard that they were starting in Huff in Cleveland, I thought, well, they picked themselves a pretty darn tough challenge, you know? And so they must be really serious. You know, they didn't pick like an easy place to start. And what they did is work with local NGOs and foundations and said, we're going to build worker-owned co-ops that will employ people coming out of jail and prison, because you may realize and know even more than I do how hard it is for people who are coming out of jail and prison to find work because of their records. And we're gonna do it because we're gonna build green worker-owned co-ops that are kind of best in class. And their goal is in within about five, they have three co-ops up and running. So if you're going to GA next year in Columbus, I'm really hoping a bunch of us can go just zip from Columbus to Cleveland to visit them. And what they're doing is they are taking institutions like the Cleveland Clinic and Case Western Reserve, and they're providing kind of the anchor buying power for the co-ops. So for example, one co-op is a solar energy co-op that uses the roof of the Cleveland Clinic to put the panels. Another is a laundry that uses very little water and is very energy efficient, because if you're a big hospital, you have a lot of sheets to wash. And so that's another guaranteed kind of business. And the third is they have one of the largest hydroponic greenhouses in an urban area in the U.S. And what's great is in addition to selling this produce in the Cleveland area to have a greater amount of locally produced veggies, is I think it's about 10% of the produce every week gets distributed for free in Huff and other neighborhoods. So they're doing just wonderful work at lots of levels, and they're now working across in many other cities looking for partners. So pray tell, if you might be interested in personally divesting from fossil fuels, or your congregation is interested in divesting from fossil fuels, and you want to put some of that money into community investment, aha, there might be cool ways to create jobs and invest in the community and also address longstanding racial discrimination. So the co-ops is just one example. And I realize I'm going over time, so I won't give you the example from my home church, but be happy to talk to you. That involves youth build and working to do weatherization with a really fantastic, fantastic national group that trains and works with young people at risk of either dropping out of high school or who need GEDs. And that group was started by two UUs. So they're really neat people. The next one is GROW. Is this resonating? Because I realize I'm just talking at you a lot. Can I see thumbs up or down or, you know, falling asleep? Okay, great. We can't have you falling asleep. Either be mad or happy, but okay. On the GROW part, is anyone here from Boca Raton? So the Boca Raton, hi Mel, the Boca Raton Church recently scored big they got, I think, I could be off a little bit on the money, but let's say roughly $30,000 from the EPA. And what they're doing is they're working with the NAACP and other groups representing low income and people of color along the coast of Florida, because you may, everyone's city and state are working on climate action plans, and particularly if you're going to be hard hit by storms or other kind of climate-related weather, you need to relook at your emergency plans, right? And as we know from Hurricanes Katrina and Sandy, often those plans are not designed with a variety of people at the table, shall we say, in terms of elders, low-income people, people who are living in more remote areas like in trailer parks, people who don't have easy transportation access. And so they're working and using the money to hold some planning meetings to redo the emergency planning, I think it's at a two-county level, that puts low-income folks and folks of color at the planning table, so that when the next storm comes and sea level rises, a whole bunch of people, I'll use the word screwed, don't get screwed in the same way. And I think that's very exciting. And they're doing this in a very wonderful interfaith partnership way. So they're trying to grow the climate movement by building alliances and making some really important changes along the way. I have talked way over my time, so I'm going to just end it there. We have tons of other examples. I know Susan and I are working to get these on the Commit to Respond website, so you don't have to worry a whole lot. We'll have the partner information and other groups up there. And so on that note, I'm going to turn it over to Susan so you can start working.
Thanks, Pam. So we wanted to give you some fodder for the exercise that we'd like you to engage in. And we really do want to tackle what we're up against right here at this workshop. So what you're going to find on your tables is a hypothetical, but we hope somewhat resonant and typical, scenario in a UU congregation in terms of our justice and environmental justice ministries. And we'll ask you to take a minute to read them. And then on the flip side, you're going to find questions. And we all have the same questions, which are, we're assuming you're someone who has or wants to introduce Commit to Respond to your congregation, and that we're going to challenge you to say, how would you do that? What's the message you're going to convey? If there's silos in your congregation, how are you going to overcome those? Take a look at what the congregation's social location is in terms of power, privilege, income, education in the community, and how that's going to influence the process and strategy you come up with, and where you would look for partners and who they might be, including perhaps international. And then we're going to say, and hopefully the case studies you just heard would help with this, what might be an area of work that could weave together environmental, economic, racial justice components related to climate? And what might be an appropriate climate justice project or initiative for the scenario that you're dealing with that would have racial and economic justice as the centerpiece? What kind of process would you use to develop it? So what's going to be hard about this, to do this as an individual? What would be hard for this hypothetical congregation? And what would you do to overcome it? Obviously, you're not going to answer each and every one of those questions, but people hear things in different ways, so we wanted to just frame it for you that way. So take a minute to read them, and then, you know, just start talking together. And I would suggest, since there's not time for introductions, just say your name and where you're from when you first speak. And we will be available, all four of us, Christopher, Peggy, me, and Pam, to help you out if you get stuck or if you've got a question, please raise your hand. and we're going to give you about 20 to 25 minutes to do this. Thank you. So you have just a few more minutes if you can start wrapping it up. So we need to bring everybody together back into the room now. And I know this was not enough time. I do just want to go on record saying we asked for a two-part workshop, but we got a one-slot workshop. So this is just a taste of what it might be like to look at what kinds of questions we need to be asking to, in fact, build a new way. That's what we're going for here. And so I've just asked Kurt Kowald, who's someone who I know is a leader in environmental justice, to just give us a reflection, since we can't, having gotten started late, do a whole popcorn of what the experience was like for you and your table and any insights you have.
Yeah, so one of the things that happened for us was we did, because we had a little bit of debate in ours whether we should actually look at our own congregation straight out and just drop this thing. Okay, but we opted to go ahead with it and use the model, but we found that we were actually interweaving our own congregations into it, because that's where our current and present and lived information is coming from, right? And knowledge is. So in the first question, then the issue became whether or not this congregation was so siloed and the people were so committed to their individual things that they actually needed help to focus, okay? And so they brought in, whether they should, and one of the folks did, bring in a consultant from the outside that was helping that congregation focus down and limit the number of things that they did. And in order to, okay. Oh, goodness, we have scenario A. But then for people who have, okay, but so you see what the dynamic was there, was within the context of that. And we consistently found, however, we kept coming back to this. We kept coming back to, even though those people who were siloed and really committed to the particular thing they were doing, and they didn't care whether it intersected with anything else, because nuclear issues are clearly the most important thing that we need to deal with, because if we do not, we're going to be leveled, right? Over here, people are saying, but if we don't stop the corporations from, you know, this rampant, so there was some conflict around this, and we realized that maybe some people wouldn't be happy, and maybe some people would actually leave. They might even just step away from, say, well, I'm not doing it anymore then with you guys. And we even had an example of somebody who left that particular congregation to go somewhere else because that issue that was chosen wasn't one that they wanted. Okay, so where's another thing here? How am I doing? Keep me, okay. Right. Then the social location and how it might, looking for partners. Well, so I had an example that I talked about, and that's the First Unitarian Church in Oakland, when we decided that if we really wanted to work on racial justice, we needed to actually work with a partner. And when we went to a group called the Ella Baker Center, which is mostly people of color, and they're focused on race issues, and we went and worked with them. So that question then was seeking within their community, this particular community, what are the organizations that actually are working on the ground that are doing the significant work that you feel you can partner with? And one of the things that they were really happy about with us is they'd never partnered with a church before. And then they found out that we were like really a different church. Because they had gay folks on their staff, and that, so the issue was trying to find partners in the community that really we could begin some kind of a dialogue with in a way that satisfied what our hopes were, and actually really that, and we could then say to them, tell us what you need, we really want to work with you. And we weren't, as we have been hearing, I think many of you have been hearing, that it's that maybe this is a place now where, as Unitarian Universalists, we could follow, we can support, we can be a powerful presence with you and for you, but we aren't going to tell you what it should be and how it should go, right? So that was a piece on that. Okay, anything else? No, I think that's it. I mean, I think that's about as far as we got. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Kurt, for just giving voice to that conversation. So I have to honor the time of ending at 4:15, so I want to let you know that there's Commit to Respond bookmarks at the back. You can find a lot of information on the Commit to Respond website. There's a sign-up sheet. If you're not already on Commit to Respond, you need to sign up to be part of this. There is a Climate Justice Water Rights petition at the UUSC booth, and it's, pardon me? It supports getting water to like farm workers in California that don't have it, and indigenous people in Alaska who don't even have water in some of the schools. And it's a real example of this kind of sweet spot work that we're talking about. So I'm hoping that
we also have someone here who is looking for delegates to sign onto the Action of Immediate Witness on Climate Change. There you go. You can find him after.
Okay. All right. As a UUA staff person, I can't vote on AIW, so that's why I needed Peggy to give you the specifics. We're hoping that before you leave the room, you will make a commitment to each other and agree to support each other spiritually as we go forth and to commit to respond. And if you're so moved, even exchange, you know, email, phone number, and say, let's stay in touch over the next year. You know, just like, I'm having a hard time trying to do this in my congregation. I could use some help. Do you have any ideas? So we're going to suggest you do that. And we're going to end the workshop with another spoken word poem from Christopher Sims. So thank you very much for coming.
Before I start, I want to say if you're interested in a copy of either poem shared, Christopher D. Sims, one M, Christopher D. S-I-M-S at outlook.com, and I can get you either copy of either poem. Christopher D. Sims, S-I-M-S. P-H. Great question. Wow. Think about that. If we hope, we can dream. This work can be daunting or extreme. We can work in teams to grow the climate movement. Doing so means local and global improvement. The UUA has committed to respond in the UU Ecological Justice Collaboratory. We're sharing our resources, coming together, and telling our stories. I was a part of a conversation on the sale of mineral rights by the UUA that has so much potential on how we can have conversations that inform and collectively that can inform collectively our association. Hold on to your conversations and take them back home and organize. Let's be in touch as we shift, advance, grow, and strategize. Let's be in touch as we shift, grants, grow, and strategize. Race, class, and climate, that's the conversation. Please go back home to your churches and congregations and do something collaborative and amazing. Thank you.